Hey, Emma.
Yeah, Jules?
Emma.
Yeah.
Emma.
Yep.
Emma.
Yes.
Let's make history.
Okay.
All right, I'm prepared. I got the weights so we can do our weight training. I've got the rope for the octopus. You brought the octopus, right?
Weight training? This is a baking podcast. What are you talking about?
Didn't you bring the... I thought today's episode was the Kraken push.
Welcome to episode 18 of Let's Bake History, a pseudo-educational podcast for fans of baking, history, and bad puns.
Our podcast is legal.
Yeah, it can drink in Europe.
And buy cigarettes and get enlisted in the U.S.
Yeah, our baby podcast could go fight in the Navy if it wanted to.
If it wanted to.
If it also was a human.
It's not.
No, it's just an audio media. But we love it for who it is.
So... I'm a little tied up right now. I'm going to bring everyone listening behind the scenes a little bit. Emma and I, as you may have, if you've been with us since episode 3, I think.
I mean, we started at episode 1,
Well, I'm saying is we used to share a mic. And then around episode 3 is when we got, well, you got me a second mic.
The second car of the podcast.
But it's turned out that the second mic is having, it's a bit temperamental.
Much like second children are.
And requires a lot of handling.
Yes, quite literally, Jules is locked in a position holding her microphone cord right now for dear life.
Yeah, the wire has to be a very particular way.
It's got to be its own way.
So that's where I am right now. Everyone, take a moment. Just think about what you're doing in your life. Give yourself some credit for it.
Your microphone is definitely the middle child of this podcast.
And then just treat yourself to the rest of this episode.
Well... my week has been a little crazy because here in New England, we got a big nor'easter snowstorm.
I got hit by a car.
Jules got hit by a car. Well,
my car got hit by a car.
Your car got hit by a car. You didn't.
I was in the car.
Personally
got hit by a car.
But we spent a lot of time inside doing what you do in New England when it's cold and gross and you don't want to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
You bake elaborate French baked goods
from
scratch.
Or eat them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You have to do the first one.
I don't have to do the first one.
So this week I attempted, I guess, and succeeded to make a croque en bouche, which is what we're talking about this week. It is a tower made entirely of cream puffs and caramel, and it is quite a process to construct.
Yeah, I really stayed out of the kitchen during the entirety of it because I didn't want to get in the way, you know, upset the flow. But I feel like you were in there for several hours.
5 hours, I timed it.
Oh.
There's a lot of waiting and assemblage.
Mm.
Assemblage?
Assembly.
Assembly.
That's the word, assembly.
I think I made up a word in my head.
Assemblage. It's French.
So if you're not driving, go ahead and Google croque en bouche right now because it's sort of, you have to see it to believe it. It's essentially, so it's made of cream puffs, which
Can I just pause you there? Croque en bouche.
Croque en bouche?
Croque en bouche.
Croque en
bouche. Croque en bouche. But the way you spell it, I mean, it's on a podcast episode, but also, if you're listening, you just look it up. Like, just spell it out the best you can. Google will know what you mean. Yep. It's fine.
So, this French dessert consists of choux pastry balls. Choux pastry is one of the main types of pastry. It's a little different from other flaky pastries because choux you actually make in a saucepan. So you heat the butter and the flour and the eggs in a saucepan and kind of stir them really fast until they make a Play-Doh toothpaste-like consistency.
Weird.
Which you then put into a pastry bag and pipe into circles on a baking tray and then bake that. The flat dough kind of puffs up in the oven and creates a crunchy outside with a doughy, light and fluffy inside.
You know, I did not know that. And I think I like them even more now that I know it's kind of like Play-Doh.
And it's spelled choux, C-H-O-U-X, not choux like the shoe you wear on your foot.
Do you know what choux means?
I believe it means cabbage.
It does mean cabbage.
In French, because the pastries, when they puff up, it's usually irregular and kind of rumpled. Mm-hmm. So it can look like a head of cabbage.
Yeah.
But this is the type of dough that you would make an eclair with or a cream puff, any of those types of usually filled pastries.
And French, I would say. They don't have to be French to use a choux pastry, but a lot of French desserts have choux. Yeah.
And they can be filled, when you fill them with a pastry cream, they're called profiteroles, okay. is the name for that. So to make the croquembouche, you make a whole ton of profiteroles, like 50 to 100.
So balls of pastry filled with stuff.
Yep, and then you fill them with cream. Mm-hmm. And then you make caramel, so you melt sugar.
Like hard caramel, soft caramel, what are we talking about here?
I guess hard caramel.
Okay.
It's not caramel. It's not the salt.
It's not like a chew.
It's not the saltwater taffy type of caramel. That would be a caramel where you add butter. This is just a caramel that is melted sugar and water. So you make the caramel, and then you take all of your choux pastry profiteroles filled with the cream, and you dip them in the hot caramel.
Oh, you dip them. Okay.
And then, very quickly, before the caramel hardens, you use the caramel to glue all of your profiteroles in a tower. So you make a ring out of a piece of parchment paper and you...
A cone, like a dunce hat.
Like a dunce hat, yeah. You glue the first ring of profiteroles to the parchment paper.
Glue, you in this case, you think caramel. Caramel adhesive.
Yes, you use the caramel to adhere rings of the profiteroles to make a conical tower of profiteroles.
Deliciousness.
Usually it's about 8 layers. I mean, the one I made was maybe a foot and a half tall, but you can make them as tall as your little architectural heart desires. And it's surprisingly sturdy. I was afraid it's going to fall over, but when caramel hardens, it is quite hard. It's like rock solid.
Yeah, it is sturdy.
So it really adheres them. And then once you've got your tower, you can decorate with spun sugar strands. So you kind of dip a fork in the sugar and swirl it around. It'll make sugary kind of spiderweb type things. Mm-hmm. You can decorate with chocolate, marzipan flowers, or real flowers, or fruit like strawberries cut in half are pretty common decorations. And I think by now you're getting the idea that this dessert is really meant to be a showstopper.
Okay.
To borrow a term from Great British Bake Off. This is meant to be not just your everyday, you know, Tuesday afternoon pastry tower. This is something that is made for special occasions. It's meant to sit at the center of a table and really grab attention.
Okay. Yeah, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. It's pretty to look at. And my personal favorite part is that you can just pluck one off and eat it. I mean, it's bite-sized.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's how you would eat it.
And it doesn't ruin the whole assembly. You know, like a piece of cake, you then leave the cake open to the element of air to get, like, stale. But with a profiterole on a croquembouche, you just pop it in your mouth, then you're good.
Yeah, you just kind of pick one off like a tree of profiteroles.
Mm.
Let's talk about the history of the croquembouche.
Oh, sorry. Sure.
Croquembouche.
Croquembouche.
So the croquembouche is a result of two sort of culinary lineages, if you want to think of it that way.
Okay.
So the first half of the croquembouche is the profiteroles themselves, so the choux pastries.
Mm-hmm.
These round baked pastries have existed in French and European cuisine in different forms for several hundred years.
Okay.
You can find small round bread rolls as early as the 1600s, called by the name profiteroles, I mean.
Oh, okay.
So potage de profiteroles.
Sure.
So we remember potage was a name for like a round puddingy dessert. Mm-hmm. We talked about pudding week. So this type of almond broth simmered pudding would have included round pastry dough.
I am pleased to hear that it's almond broth.
And then as time went on, the profiteroles became increasingly sweet. So most baked history is savory until sort of the 16 to 1800s when sugar started becoming more available. So profiteroles started being sweeter, filled with pastry cream, that type of thing. So we have the profiteroles. The other half of the croquembouche is the structure. Because anyone can make a round baked good, but to assemble them in like the theatrical way mm-hmm. is another very common theme in baking history.
Yeah, that's a deviation from the norm and therefore is a milestone and some sort of, you know, achievement.
It might not be as much of a deviation from the norm as you might think.
Okay.
So throughout European history, and I would say probably other cultures throughout the world, there's this tradition of theatrical food and theatrical baking. So whether you're looking at the Middle Ages of Europe or whether you're looking at certain times in Asian history or whether you're looking at Victorian England, you can see these times when there would have been royal or noble banquets where they wanted to have food to portray how powerful and influential the family was, to show off how many cooks they had, to show off how much money they
extravagance that, you know, they didn't care if they wasted it.
Exactly. To have, you
they
know,
were fine.
A dozen stuffed boars and a whole pile of marzipan, you know, to show off the extravagance.
Now I want boar.
And this, of course, extends to cakes and pies and other baked creations that would show off the pastry skills of the household. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the decorative pastry and sweet sculptures were called pièces montées.
Can you spell the last word?
It's assembled piece or mounted piece.
Okay.
In French. And this was the term for architectural forms, usually inedible forms made of sugar paste or marzipan or fondant, some kind of sweet, like modeling substance.
Right.
And they would be made in elaborate forms. They were just there to show off wealth and power. They weren't meant to be eaten, although they were made out of like marzipan.
Right.
And this was very much a staple for European royalty throughout the 16, 17, 1800s. In fact, this type of sculpture would have been at the table of our favorite Italian noblewoman turned French monarch.
Medici?
Yes, Catherine de' Medici.
Oh, man.
She, of course, was Italian and brought her Italian pastry chefs over to France.
Right.
Thus combining the history of the two
culinary
traditions.
I remember now.
And a lot of that was influencing this type of very elaborate baked good.
Right.
So the croquembouche combines round pastry, choux pastry balls with this history of architectural, elaborate centerpiece baking into something that's actually edible and delicious and used at banquets. The name croquembouche translates to something that crunches in the mouth.
Yep, bouche means mouth.
And croche means to crunch. So it's like a crunchy thing, which makes sense because the caramel is very crunchy when you eat it.
Can you just imagine for a moment with me if we just call croquembouche the mouth crunch?
It sounds so much nicer when it's in French, but yeah.
Give me some of that mouth crunch.
Why is everything less elegant when you translate it to English?
I mean... What do you want for your wedding, dear? Mouth crunch.
Well, you can take up this argument with our favorite boy, Antonin Carême, which I believe we've mentioned him in a previous episode because he is a very famous French chef. I'm going to try his name again. Antonin Carême? No, that's Italian. Carême, you wouldn't pronounce that E. He's a very famous French chef in the 1800s. He's pretty well known because he invented the chef's hat.
He was my boy that I spoke about in our 10th episode when we did 10 influential bakers in history. He was great.
He's influential for a lot of things.
He was like standardizing a big old pastry chef, fantastical creations, nonsense.
Yep. Well, one of the things that he is credited with sort of inventing or... patenting isn't the right word, but coming with the official recipe for is the croquembouche.
Oh.
So, like I said, the components would have existed in various forms, but in his 1815 cookbook, Les Pâtisseries Royales, he included a recipe for a croquembouche as it stands today with the choux pastry in the tower.
Right, the presentation, the like decor, all that stuff.
And this makes a lot of sense for him, actually, because he was one of many chefs of the time who was known for incorporating architecture into his baking. He he's known for making things out of shoe pastries, mm-hmm. like Gothic towers and pavilions, Turkish yeah. mosques. He would make all of these, like, recreate architectural mm-hmm. wonders out of puff pastry. And the feeling I got from researching
puff pastry or shoe pastry or both?
Shoe pastry, okay. Excuse me.
Yep.
The impression I got from researching him was that he tried a couple different variations of the croquembouche of what he wanted the form to look like. So okay. he tried one that looked kind of like a fez, like a kind of round
mm-hmm. like shape. A hat box.
He tried a couple different things, but then ultimately landed on the conical pyramid tower, yeah. shape. He decided that that was the perfect epitome of beautiful architecture mm-hmm. and simplicity.
I would agree. It does have a very elegant look to it.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I think he was also the one who started to popularize its use as a wedding cake. So okay. in a lot of French and I believe Italian communities, you could use a croquembouche as in place of a wedding cake, sort of elaborately decorated.
Mm-hmm.
They're still popular today in France in certain communities. Adriano Zumbo, who we mentioned also.
Oh, he does.
In the macaroon episode.
He's the Australian baking
guru. Yeah.
Celebrity.
He does a lot of profiterole tower creations. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of those very elaborate baked goods that you can make a splash with. So I mm-hmm. think it's still popular in certain communities. It's not an easy thing to make. So I don't think it's quite like something you can't really buy it in a pastry shop, for instance. So it's right. not something you would just walk in and get. You have to order it or make it. So I think that keeps it in a realm of specialty baked goods.
Right, a little bit of prestige almost.
Yeah, I mean, even a macaron you can walk into a pastry shop and buy. You don't really mm-hmm. buy a croquembouche. It's like a...
Right, because they don't last very long, do they?
No, you're really supposed to eat them the day you make them.
Right. Well, I think they're super tasty.
Yeah, the only problem with making a croquembouche for yourself is that you then have to eat 50 cream puffs just all by yourself.
And like Emma said, if you missed it at the beginning, there was a blizzard here. And so it was just us two in our apartment with a croquembouche and no one else to help us.
Yep. Yeah. It's really dangerous because you can just pick them off one at a time. And you're like, oh, I only eat one.
It was kind of fun, though, the next few days when, like, the sugar did start to melt again, you know, from the heat.
It just sort of drooped.
And then you just hear, like, a tink of, like, the hard caramel falling and landing on a surface.
As it slowly disintegrates.
It was really nice to go return back to Antonin Carême. I miss talking about the famous people. I feel like the last couple episodes we haven't really talked about big names, and now we know. Now we know more about him.
Well, let's put that knowledge to the test with a little round of proved or underproved. I feel like I need a little theme song.
You say this almost every other episode.
Yeah, I forget in between episodes.
Ready?
That I want a
Ready?
Theme song. Yeah, do your best shot.
Guess who's gonna quiz today, Jules is. Guess who's gonna quiz today, Emma's gonna quiz Jules. Hey!
Perfect. All right. Question one. So we talked a little bit about how in Italy and France, croquembouches are often served at weddings in place of a wedding cake.
Mm.
However, this dessert can also be served at several other important ceremonies. Can you name two? I'll give you a hint. They're both religious ceremonies.
I was just going to say funeral, but that's probably really wrong. But that was a baptism comes to mind.
Okay.
And communion.
You are correct.
Both?
Two for two. Baptism and first communions are other common croquembouche serving opportunities in Italy and France.
I am so pleased with myself for knowing
that. All right,
let's
keep this energy going.
Yeah, go, go, go.
Question two is a little harder. Mm-hmm. So, due to the British control of lots of territories during the 16 to 1800s, profiteroles are still today the national dish of one British territory. Can you guess which one? Is it A, Bermuda, B, the Cayman Islands, C, Gibraltar, or D, the Virgin Islands?
I don't know anything about any of those islands.
Cool. One of them really likes cream puffs. That's all I know.
I don't think it's Gibraltar. I have no reason why. I feel like Cayman, no. I don't know why. I'm going to go with Virgin Islands. I don't know. Virginia. I feel like croque and bouche became popular around the same time. So that's what I'm going with.
That's a good guess. It's actually Gibraltar.
the first one I ruled out.
I know nothing about these islands, so I feel like that guess was as good as any. Unless you have an intimate knowledge of those places.
Nope.
You're from Gibraltar, maybe. For our one Gibraltar listener, they were like, oh, come on.
I was born and raised in America, but...
They're just eating profiteroles as they listen to this episode.
You know what's really interesting? Side note. I never realized quite until someone from not the U.S. pointed it out, but everyone who grew up in the United States usually says, I'm from America. But everyone else refers to America as the United States, because America...
Is the continent.
A continent. North America, yeah. South America. So you could say I'm from America and be in Mexico and be completely true.
You're not wrong.
I mean, I know we're the USA, United States of America. I don't know. Still. It was just something I thought was interesting. Question three.
All right.
Bring it. I'm here to redeem.
Question three. Mm. In March of 2009, alumni of a management and catering technology institute in India created... their world record biggest croque en bouche. But can you tell me how tall it was? Was it 12 feet, 15 feet, 20 feet, or 42 feet?
No, I cannot tell you how tall.
I guess technically that's a correct answer.
All right, I feel like 12 feet is the height of a basketball hoop, right?
I don't know.
I feel like I learned that in fifth grade gym class.
Sure, that sounds right.
Although I'm probably wrong. I know nothing about sports. Go Patriots. Yeah, 15 feet is 3 feet taller than that. So, you know, not significantly, but...
math works out there.
But if you think on a layer of scales, that's significantly more little bits of profiterole. And, you know, exponentially... not exponentially, but like significantly so for the 25 and the 42. 15. Final answer.
You're correct. It's 15 feet.
I've redeemed myself.
3 feet taller than a basketball hoop is a very, very tall croque en bouche tower.
I think a basketball hoop is 12 feet tall. Like the basket, not the backboard.
Right. Yeah.
But don't add us if we're wrong. Actually, do add us. I want to always try and correct the knowledge that is incorrect in my head.
I wonder how many profiteroles that took.
We could do a math problem.
Listeners, do a math problem and tell us how many profiteroles that would be.
If a cone is 15 feet high and...
See, it depends on how wide it is.
No, it does depend
on how
wide
it is. There's probably a critical width to support the structure. No, I don't want to do this math problem. Question four. Final question. Mm. Going out strong.
Thank you.
In 2017, one famous American actor tweeted that they were making a moist croque en bouche.
Oh, gross.
And my soul just died reading that. But can you name which
celebrity? Wait. Let's think about that in English. A moist mouth crush.
I hate it so much.
An American celebrity tweeted out they're making a moist mouth crunch.
Yep.
What was the rest of it?
Just can you name them?
And can I name the celebrity?
Yes. I can give you a hint, but it will probably give it away.
Can you give me a lesser hint?
This celebrity has not always been an actor. They were something else before they were an actor.
Not every celebrity's always been an actor, Emma.
You're right. Some were postmen first.
I mean, like, they were children. They went to school.
I'll give you a different hint. Fine.
Thank you.
All right. This celebrity has a particular tagline, which I'll give you a part of.
Is it The Rock?
Because can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
It's The Rock.
It is. Dwayne The Rock Johnson apparently likes making some croque en bouche.
That is so charming. I am so pleased to know that. That There's man has about, yeah. many skills, like Terry Crews, you know?
Yeah.
There are these men that look very strong and intimidating, and you just got to peel back the layers because they really have so much going on underneath.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Yeah. How talented of a man.
I'm just picturing him in an apron making me some puff pastries.
I mean, I know you said they weren't hard to make, but they were just, like, laborious, but still, like, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, they're challenging. I wouldn't say it's the most challenging thing just on the baking level. It's like the whole process that's very challenging.
I think I'm charmed most by it because in America, in the United States, baking isn't seen as a very quote-unquote masculine trait, you know, like a hobby. And I think it's particularly charming for someone like The Rock, who is very, you know, perceived as being very masculine, as embracing and encouraging others to take on this role. I think that's a great role model for other little little rocks out there, little pebble.
Baby pebbles.
Baby pebbles. You want to just eat some and make some peripherals.
That's so cute. Well, on that touching note, I think that's all the time we have for this week's croquembouche. I'm trying to work it into a pun, and it's a really
crack and push was as far as I could get.
It's a long word.
I worked hard on that one.
Well, what are we going to be talking about next time, Jules?
As I promised last episode, we're going to talk about baked goods that are used to celebrate the Lunar New Year, because that's coming up in 2 weeks, roughly.
I'm very excited to hear all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, until then, you can find us on the social medias at Bake History Cast, both Twitter and Instagram.
And you can also download our podcast, encourage your friends to download the podcast episodes wherever fine podcasts are baked.
If you want to see some good photos of the croquembouche we created, they're on the website, letsbakehistory.com.
Until then, I am Jules.
And I'm Emma.
Thanks for baking history with us.